top holiday gifts for the lefty in your life.
Order now.
Because the supply chain,
Sean Hannity.
All this is preventable.
Today at 3:06 on 55 KRC.
The 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Monday.
I'm the dude, man.
And I'm Brian Thomas, and Joe Strecker's back. I like seeing Joe in the booth. Executive producer of the program. He's got a good show lined up for us today. Beginning with Dan Hills, who's got a big problem with the case of a guy named Jamie Williams accused of murder. Let out on $25,000 bond at 10%, which means he got out for $2,500 and was already gone and off into the ether when they, well, they charged him with some additional drug charges on top of it. So the judge and the bond situation didn't have quite all the facts in front of him. But the idea that you can shoot someone and kill them, they clearly have probable cause to have arrested him in the first instance, and just get out on $2,500 bond. It kind of strikes people the wrong way. Certainly members of law enforcement. Dan Hills, FOP president, is going to join us at 6:30 to do a little bit of a spleen vent in advance of my dad's spleen vent today coming up at 7:05. Jerry Thomas with the Monday morning spleen vent. Not going to have one next Monday because I'm off, taking an extra day off, trying to smoke them while you got them. In terms of sliding into the holidays. And speaking of holidays, I hope you really had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I certainly did. It was great seeing the family, and the food was fantastic. And thank you, Mom, for all your hard work. Boy, at 82, 83, it's a little difficult to cook for 18 people. So is she going to retire completely from Thanksgiving? We're not quite sure yet. But for all the years that Mom has blessed us with her wonderful cooking, God bless you, Mom. We love you so much for it. Anyway, Thanksgiving was great, and I hope yours was as well. And as I mentioned, the spleen vent coming up at 7:05, followed by Money Monday with Brian James. We're going to talk about the Dow Jones, the Omicron version. Why didn't they call it new, N-U, the next Greek letter? Why didn't they call it G-X-I, which isn't the way you pronounce it in Greek alphabet? But it looks like Xi Jinping, and some think that, well, the reason they skipped new and G, first off, new sounds like new, N-E-W, and it would confuse people. We called it the new coronavirus. People are like, oh, my God, it's something different. Well, it is different. It's mutated. But it's still the same category. And we're still learning a lot about it, in spite of the fact. And don't you love, the first thing that I noticed about this was, When Joe Biden does something, it's supposed to be okay. But if Donald Trump did, it was evil. So anything Trump ever did, as we know, was bad. It was ready, fire, aim in terms of assessing what Trump did. Trump locks down travel from China early on in the whole coronavirus spread, and was accused of being xenophobic. We have the new Omicron version floating around. You notice travel had been reopened, and people were flying all over the globe. We've gotten through, I guess, our initial reaction to the original coronavirus, although Delta, I believe, was the big concern that was raised for a while there. It was the dominant form of coronaviruses floating around. Okay, now we've got like four cases of Omicron. I know I'm wrong when I say four, but a handful. And it's already in multiple countries. Joe Biden shuts down travel to a whole variety of African countries. Ooh, doesn't that sound racist and xenophobic? Is it not racist and xenophobic if Joe Biden does it? If it is definitively racist and xenophobic when Donald Trump does it? Don't look for logic or reason or reality in any of this. It's just is a bunch of, well, I guess it's a bunch of crap. Or, as one could more clearly state it, it's just yet another reason to ignore what the mainstream media says in 99.9% of the cases, I think. Purely political. They have become so entrenched in left-wing politics that they don't even step back from what they're saying and evaluate it in sort of a subjective or objective way. Like, wait a second. All right, hold on. We told everybody in the world that Trump was a xenophobe for shutting off travel. Why can we get away with it and say that it's okay to shut off travel now? No cases of Omicron yet in the United States, at least according to Dr. Fauci, who is science. You heard that, I hope. He is science. the arrogance of this guy. I am science. If you criticize me, you are criticizing science. Wow. Wow. I wonder what it's like to be the man, the single human being on the planet that has the answer to all things science related. What an awesome power Dr. Fauci has. And it was funny because early on Friday, before Biden announced the travel ban to all those African nations, he said it might be premature to do that because we don't know enough about the virus to really know whether we're going to need it to lock down things. And and Biden was out yesterday saying, well, Dr. Fauci said we need a couple extra weeks to have definitive information on the new coronavirus variant, Omicron. And they already say it's going to come into the United States. It's everywhere. Canada's already reported a couple of cases. We've got cases in Germany and then Denmark and elsewhere. So first detected in southern Africa, been confirmed in Australia, Belgium, Botswana, Britain, Denmark, Germany, Hong Kong, Israel, Italy, the Netherlands, France, South Africa, and Canada. Our neighbors to the north, in case you've forgotten about Canada. Fauci talking yesterday on ABC News is the new variant will inevitably reach the United States. Well, it's duh. U.S. health officials working with their counterparts in South Africa who are begging the rest of the world, please don't cut us off, please. Fauci told NBC, he said the flight curbs would give them more time to gather information and weigh possible action. It's clearly giving indication that it has the capability of transmitting rapidly. That's the thing that's causing us now to be concerned. All right. Anyway, the markets got spooked. One new variant pops up, the market tanks. We'll hear from Brian James on that, among other topics. U.S. jobless claims, 52-year low. That after seasonal adjustments. And real cost of the 12 days of Christmas, of course, inflationary pressures are surrounding us. And wow. That reminds me of the entire stack of absolutely bat crap insane realities concerning the fuel prices and Biden's efforts to deal with the fuel prices. I mean, I can sum this up pretty quickly. I didn't get into the details right now. So he releases 50 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. 50 million barrels. Do you know how much that is in terms of our consumption? How many days? Jew, you're actually an hour is kind of close. 3 days of United States consumption, 50 million barrels, as if that's going to do anything. So right off the bat, you can be suspicious, like, well, wait a second. Aren't we supposed to use this in times of real emergency, hurricanes, you know, when refineries get shut down, real problem stuff, a complete disruption in the supply of oil. Oh, my God, we're in the middle of a crisis. That's when you unleash the Strategic Petroleum Oil Reserve. Not because the prices have gone up. Prices which have gone up because of everything that you've done to force them to go up. So you create a problem with our security because you've got a political problem that's weighing around your neck. People are upset that the price of gasoline has gone up. Duh. We need to do something to protect our photo below the jobs. All right, so let's get 50 million barrels out there. 3 days worth of consumption. So you think, okay, let's got to do something. No. This is impossible to believe. A lot of the oil is going to wind up in the hands of China and India. Both countries reportedly actively purchasing U.S. sour crude produced in the Gulf of Mexico. 18 million barrels of the 50 million barrels he released from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve have already been approved for sale to the Chinese and the Indians. That means 32 million barrels remain and will be intended for U.S. consumers, which means, well, then you've got like 2 days worth of supply. And then there's the reaction from the OPEC nations. You can't make this stuff up, folks. OPEC, Saudi Arabia, Russia, all considering pausing their planned efforts to ramp up production after we and other countries decided they would draw down their national strategic petroleum reserves. See, we've been begging. Now, don't forget, part of the equation of this and the stupidity, the bat crap insanity of all this, and if you can make sense of it, please, dear Lord, call me and let me know how this makes any blanking sense. We beg the Russians and OPEC to increase production because we have reduced our production here in the United States. The demand starts going up. We're like, okay, who's got the oil? We're not going to get our own, so let's go to, I don't know, the Saudis and our sworn enemies, the Russians. Please, would you please pump more out? In the meantime, the Band-Aid solution is release money or release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. OPEC, Russia says, how about no? As a matter of fact, instead of no, we're not going to increase production, we're going to curb it to account for the additional 50 million barrels you released. Okay.
Let's go, Brandon.
Hold on. Icing on the cake, Joe. We haven't gotten to the icing on the cake yet. Biden administration issued a report Friday that they want to increase by 50% the price of oil leasing fees on federal lands in the United States. So if you can get approval to drill on federal lands in the United States, which I understand it's an uphill battle, you're going to be paying 50% more as an oil company doing the drilling to get the lease. 50% more. When's the first, the first rate hike since 1920? You've made it more expensive to produce oil domestically. That money goes into the coffers of the United States government, who's, you know, they're always short on cash in the U.S. government. They said it would generate, according to the New York Times, generate an extra $2.5 billion in new revenue by the end of the decade, which oil companies would pay, yes, to the federal government. Which means you, the end consumer, will be paying more for domestically produced oil on federal lands. You can't make this up. And now let's take the stake and stab it through the heart of sanity, since there may be someone out there who still says this sounds like it makes sense. Germany and the United States are working with the Russians to complete the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. We can't have one. Our XL pipeline was put, you know, was executive pen in hand removed from viability by Joe Biden. No XL pipeline. And they're busily working to try to shut down the other pipeline that supplies the greater Michigan area with all of its oil. Let's shut that one down, too. In the meantime, let's facilitate Russia having complete control over the European Union insofar as the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is concerned. This is even comical. Of course, the obvious is, it needs to be stated, it would make Europe too reliant on Russian gas. Germany, on its behalf, has agreed to take action if Russia uses energy as a weapon in its relations with Ukraine. The deal they're working on doesn't provide specific criteria for how that will be judged. According to Axios, November 19th document outlining steps Germany would take, including, are you ready? This will work with the Russians, quote, strong public messages, close quote, condemning Russia's behavior and assessing the suspension of political meetings. Yeah, that'll work. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline's up and running, and Russia decides to maybe cut the spigot off for reasons political. Strong words from the German people will follow. Ooh, boy, that's unbelievable. 519-55-KRCD Talk Station, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on your AT&T phone. If you think all that makes sense.
Let's go, Brandon. Let's go, Brandon.
523 at 55KRCD Talk Station. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. When you can't listen live, pull it up on podcast at 55KRC.com. And the virus companies talk about this Omicron variant, saying, you know, we're going to need a couple of weeks' worth of data. We're going to tweak our virus. our vaccines. We don't know if our vaccines currently work for the new Omicron virus. And by all accounts, the physicians on the ground in South Africa are saying it really isn't that bad, at least in terms of how it's impacted people who have actually contracted it. Some unusual symptoms, some coughing, muscle aches, but overall pretty mild by comparison. And apparently not many hospitalizations. So is there anything to really worry about? It sounds like the seasonal flu to me. And they're trying to keep us back on our heels, are they not? I mean, oh my God, because it is a coronavirus variant and therefore we need to lock down. They're locking down again. It's like they're going to cancel Christmas again. No, I guess you can't say Christmas, right? Because it's offensive to people who don't celebrate Christmas. Happy Hanukkah to my Jewish friends, parenthetically. Got lots and lots of friends that are of the Jewish faith, and you know, I wish them the best, and I will celebrate right along with you if you let me. And I'm not offended if you wish me Happy Hanukkah. I embrace the idea that you could, you know, wish your fellow man the joy and celebration that you're experiencing with your religion and your faith. Thank you for including me in the happy well wishes, and I'll pass them right back to you, even though I'm not Jewish. Sorry, I got that just because I saw this article from the United Kingdom where the civil servants have removed the word Christmas from one of their government campaigns to try to encourage you to get the vaccine. Yeah. Don't take COVID home for Christmas. Deemed offensive by the powers that be in the United Kingdom. Can't say Christmas because you might offend those who don't celebrate Christmas. Well, how about don't take COVID home for holiday? No. That actually was tried. They said, no. You just don't do that. We don't refer to Christmas as the holidays. That's an Americanism, according to the email from the civil servants in the United Kingdom. Please, can we say, don't take COVID-19 home? Whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. Jeez Louise, canceling Christmas. 526, 55 KRC, the talk station. Your wellness center is going to make your life a lot better place if you're, if you're struggling with defeat. 530, coming up at 531, Monday. Like it or not. I do like it. This week's Listener Lunch is going to be at Anderson Pub and Grill on Wednesday, which is the day we have Listener Lunch. Regularly meet roughly at 11:30. You have some flexibility front or back end on that one. Just hope you can make it. Anderson Pub is just a really welcoming place. Always have a great time there. Another place we always have a great time. They're always very welcoming. Price Hill Chili. That'll be the final one for the year. That's December 15th. So if you can put it down on your calendar, we'd love to see you. Really nice opportunity to get out and celebrate the holidays or just the idea of getting out of the house before the lockdowns had come again. Anyway, over to local stories. Got a man dead in a shooting. Actually, it was funny because I got a text, saw a message, I believe it was from Westside Jim Keever about this. Stay away from the Walmart in Westwood, I believe was something to that effect. And here's the reason why. Man dead after a shooting happened Saturday afternoon outside the Walmart Superstore in Westwood. According to Cincinnati Police, about 3:30 in the afternoon, officers responded to a report of a person shot in the 23-year block of Ferguson Road. Officers arrived, found one male victim suffering from a gunshot wound. According to police, Cincinnati Fire personnel responded to the scene, determined the victim to be dead. 24-year-old Jemontea Brown, name of the victim. Cincinnati Police Department Homicide Unit continuing to investigate the shooting. If you have any information, Homicide Unit, that's 352-3542. Or if you can just always remember the Crime Stoppers number, 352-3040. If you got a tip on that one, be doing society a huge favor. One man in custody after a shooting in Villages at Roll Hill Saturday afternoon, according to Cincinnati Police, 4:30 p.m. Police showed up at the 2400 block of Nottingham Road after reports of a shooting. Officers found a five-year-old. That's so sad. Fortunately, a superficial wound, victim treated at the scene. One adult male was detained. That man has not been identified by the time of the inquiry reporting on it. District 3 investigators were still on the scene of the shooting. At least, I imagine they're not any longer. Probably if you have any information on that one, the police would love to hear from you as well. Cincinnati Mayor-elect Aftab Perival. Boy, that's a hard thing to say. Cincinnati mayor-elect. Anyway, he's an Ohio State University grad, got his degree, law degree from my alma mater, University of Cincinnati. Elected in November, sworn in January 1st, going to spend 3 days of his week at a seminar on transition for newly elected mayors put on by the Harvard University Kennedy School in collaboration with the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Mayors from cities with more than 75,000 people were invited to attend the seminar. Build is one of its kind program. That's their words, not mine. Anyway, offers a practical advice and best practices from experts in public policy, media, the private sector, municipal governments, and current and former mayors. Expected to address the challenges of managing a city during the pandemic, leading during a crisis, economic development, and keeping cities safe. These are all topics about which Avtab Purvall knows nothing, so maybe it's a good thing he's going to a seminar. Jeez. Jason, get used to it. You think it's like Mark Mallory? He'll be at seminars all over the globe. Yeah, but Mallory was out traveling all over the place because he was out drumming up business. He wasn't on vacation, Joe. He was bringing in real big fish from foreign lands to set up shop here in Cincinnati. I have a bridge I'd like to sell you, too. 534. It's 540 here at 55 Care CD Talk Station. Hope you're having a happy Monday. Phone number here if you'd like to call 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or #550 on AT&T phones. Joe's a little distressed. He attempted to reach out to Mr. John and respond to his offer. I was asking, what the hell is this? It's in this top of the stack of stupid. And Joe said, I got this email. I remember when they used to fax these, and Joe said, I'm surprised they still email them. Little suspicion, little red flag maybe. Hi, my name is Mr. John. I am a banker. I have a discreet proposal for you that will be of immense benefit to both of us, although this may be hard for you to believe. We stand to gain $7.2 million U.S. dollars between us in a matter of days. Please grant me the benefit of doubt and hear me out. If interested, kindly reply to my email for more details if you're interested. Very suspicious at sharingtogiverada.gov.ua. It's not a red flag, is it? Just as he clicked on the link and nothing happened. Is that a reflection of your level of desperation, Mr. Strecker? I don't want to hear that. Webcam model, which I suppose could be really anybody. If you have a webcam and you appear online, you too can call yourself a webcam model. Anyway, accidentally shot herself in the vagina with a 9mm handgun while recording a video in her Georgia home.
Dude, what the hell?
Responding to what is characterized, what is called in the report as an accidental gunshot wound. We're in Macon, Georgia, I believe, on this one. Sheriff's deputy encountered an EMS worker in the property's driveway around noon on the 9th of November. The paramedic, who was holding an unloaded handgun and a spent bullet casing in his hand, explained that, quote, the female had shot herself in her vagina accidentally.
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
According to interviews with other residents of the home, deputies determined that Lauren Hunter Damon, 27, apparently alone in her bedroom when the gun was discharged. Jordan Allen, a guy who is described as the guy who owns a firearm, told deputies he was in a kitchen when he heard the gunshot. Upon reaching the bedroom, he found Damon with, quote, a small amount of blood, close quote, on her leg, and advised that she started saying that she was sorry. He advised that she told him that she shot herself accidentally. Allen told deputies Damon has subscribers on what is described as a sexual web platform called Chatter, and that she, quote, makes sexual videos of herself and people pay her to see them, close quote. Allen said that he thinks that she was recording a video at the time the gun went off.
Phrasing?
She was by herself. Ellen told the deputies that she had subscribers on a sexual web platform. And apparently it creates these videos, if I can use the term loosely, in response to requests from what people want in the audience. Firearms and sex, do those go together at all? Under any circumstance whatsoever? A loaded firearm?
Are we not saying phrasing anymore?
I'm sorry. There's some really sick, twisted people in the world. And there's some extraordinarily dumb people in the world. I think that was a combination of both. All right. Delta Air Flight DL-1360 to Atlanta. We have, what I would characterize as a rather bizarre incident. Aircraft communications addressing the reporting system message read, quote, request red coat meet AX passenger and seat 13A is, I'm not making this up, folks, is breastfeeding a cat. And will not put cat back in its carrier when the flight attendant requested. Request red coat means suggest that the pilot had a member of Delta's red coat ground team meet the passenger upon landing. We'll just throw her in the pile with that woman who shot herself in the vagina, creating a sexually explicit video for some twisted viewer. Anyhow, 545, 55 KRC, the talk station. More stupid coming up. First word for Plum Tight Plumbing, never charging a service. Just shy of 550 at 55 KRC, the talk station. And a very happy Monday to you. Just looking at the Stack of Stupid. I had a conversation with Joe Strucker about one of the stories in the Stack of Stupid. Sometimes, you know, you need a reading because of FCC compliance. And sometimes after you discuss a story and you read it enough, you realize there is no possible way that you can rehabilitate the story to convey the facts contained within the story and still fall within FCC compliance. So let us just summarize the story by saying, you shouldn't have sex inside a patrol car after being arrested. I wish I could read that out loud, actually. Anyway, let's go back to Florida. A Florida woman arrested Saturday on felony narcotics charges. Told police that she sells fentanyl in order to make money to pay for an attorney, quote, for a pending drug charge, close quote. Guess this is how you keep stacking on the need to sell drugs. You get more and more drug charges. Nicole Gregory, who's 28, busted after a sheriff's deputy spotted her dropping a bag that held four baggies containing synthetic opioid fentanyl. The defendant did intend to sell the substance, according to the investigation. After being arrested in St. Petersburg Street, Gregory reportedly admitted that she sells the drug for $10 per bump, her words. She claimed that she was selling narcotics to make money for an attorney for a pending drug charge. According to the court records, she's arrested last month for selling methamphetamine to an undercover cop. Back in August, she was charged with possessing fentanyl and methamphetamine. Both cases are still pending. In addition to the new fentanyl rap, she will be charged with four other drug counts after she was found in possession of narcotics, including meth, morphine, and oxycodone. She bonded out of jail after posting an $18,000 bond.
As is tradition.
All right. This kind of reminds me of the one that we talked about earlier. A Texas couple named Courtney Ann and Nick. Courtney Ann and Nick, because that's what they go by, their first names, bring in, at least they claim, $350,000 a year selling Courtney Ann's explicit videos on a website called OnlyFans, which is I guess, perhaps a commonplace occurrence, but because she is the mother of two, and she gets a hard time about it. Courtney and Nick, Fort Worth residents, share two daughters, ages 16 and 13, say that they're not worried about what their children will think of their X-rated endeavors. Quote, I have received comments and messages from people saying that they would be embarrassed to be my kids. Some even write that my kids are going to be whores like me. Yeah. They explain that they're often the subject of rumors, have to dispel reports that they host wild sex parties inside their home. Said, people think we have sex parties every night, but we're just normal parents. Redefining normal. When my best friend stays over and posts on social media about being there, she will, without fail, receive DMs asking if she's having sex with myself and Nick. Another friend was asked what it's like at our house and if we have sex parties and walk around naked. They claim to have lost family members and friends over what is described as her career. She also claims that her two daughters embrace their parents' unconventional professions. Quote, they know we make sexy modeling content and make a living off of it. Oh, is that what it's called? It's modeling content, Joe. That's all it is. It's just modeling content.
I don't make the rules, ma'am. I just think them up and write them down.
She claims that, again, her 16 and 13-year-olds, who probably will at some point in their near future be in counseling, they think it's funny and crazy that people judge us for what we do. It's got to be a better way to make a living. $350,000, though? That is a contemplative look, Joe. Don't do that. Let's see if we can get this one in here.
Phrasing?
Stop it. Los Angeles Fire Department investigated an incident in which a firefighter, quote, responded inappropriately, close quote, that's in the report, after being handed a letter to comply with the city's vaccine mandate. LAFD fire, a member responded to receiving a noncompliance letter by dropping his pants and wiping his buttocks with the letter, leaving fecal matter on the document before dropping it to the ground. According to the Centurions of Los Angeles City, a group representing African-American firefighters. Don't know how they got involved, but they were involved. Situation underscores resistance among some fire departments over the city's mandate. Spokeswoman for the fire department, Cheryl Gutuzia, said the incident is alleged to have occurred on November 18th. The department is aware of the seriousness of the allegation and took immediate action upon learning of the incident. Declined to comment on the details. She said the firefighter is on paid administrative leave and will face the consequences of any inappropriate act. She did not elaborate or specifically talked about what prompted the leave. Fire department captain and chief officer witnessed the incident. The Centurions said in a statement sent to the Board of Fire Commissioners and city leaders, it took place at Fire Station 69. Centurion statement said, the L.A. City Centurions are sickened and disgusted by this horrific display of unprofessionalism. To date, we have not heard from anyone from the LAFD administration condemning this act of blatant disrespect and harassment. This group called on the mayor and others to take swift action and immediate action to deter any city employee from feeling entitled and not encouraged, but empowered to behave in such an embarrassing and threatening manner. This group described the act as a terminable offense. The statement included a photo of a man holding what appeared to be a discolored document. Leave it to your imagination. 556, 55 Care City Talk Station. Plenty coming up. Omicron. Oh, my God, we're all going to die. Plus, Dan Hills, FOP president, on a little problem with bail of late. Stick around. Be right back after the news.
The uninformed can significantly raise their informedness by getting the boost.
Check in and get your boost.
The news boost.
55 KRC.
Coming up on 6:06 here at 55 KRC Talk Station. Brian Thomas here. Josh Drucker, executive producer in there, and a phone number if you'd like. A couple of phone numbers. I go to the same place. 513-749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Okay, something on your mind, care to talk about? I'd love to hear from you, of course. Omicron. It's not new. It's not G. It's Omicron for obvious reasons. Can't call it G. No way. Hey, and since we, you know, I was just thinking about that because they did skip a couple of the Greek letters in doing this. And the reasons, I mean, I think are really obvious. They don't need to come out loud and say it. They didn't want to call it new and you because confuse people, not paying attention that these are named after Greek letters, these various types of COVID mutations. But they're not calling it G either. And I don't think that's how you pronounce the Greek letter XI. But, of course, since the Chinese president's first name is G, we can't have that considering the source of the coronavirus and the outbreaks around this globe of ours. I think all signs point to the Wuhan lab. Of course, you've got Dr. Fauci, who is science now. He's made a declaration that you can't disagree with him because he is science, which is just absolutely bat crap insane when you think about it. And the level of arrogance that one has to have to come out with a statement basically saying just that. And I love how he deflects because, you know, Senator Rand Paul's been all over Dr. Fauci, as has Ted Cruz. He lied to Congress. I mean, there's been definitive confirmation that the Wuhan lab did do gain-of-function research. The lab itself has already confirmed that. And so it's weird when you – it's not weird, but it's so obvious when Dr. Fauci is pressed on this that he deflects. And his most recent deflection was, you know, related to Senator Ted Cruz, who wants a special counsel appointed to ask about and look into the seemingly obvious lie that Dr. Fauci made when he lied to Congress saying that there was absolutely no gain-of-function research funded by the United States government. We know this not to be true. So an investigation, because he did violate provisions of the U.S. Code, punishable by up to five years in jail for lying to Congress. His deflection was to ask Senator Cruz, well, what about January 6th? And when I saw that, what? January 6th, you know, the storming of the Capitol. Okay, have all the outrage in the world if you want about that. What in the hell has that got to do with whether he lied to Congress in connection with a completely different subject matter? That's just a terrible job at deflection. I mean, you think the smartest man on the planet, Mr. Science himself, who cannot be attacked, his credibility is beyond reproach, mentions January 6th in the context of a conversation involving whether or not he lied to Congress. Anyhow, two stories I wanted to get in, and I think this one speaks volumes. And I just wrote giant WTF on top of this because, you know, and also along with nothing to see here. Pay no attention, nothing to see here. This is outrageous. The Food and Drug Administration is now saying it will take them roughly 55 years to respond to a Freedom of Information Act request related to the licensing of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. Now, of course, I hope you know what a FOIA is. FOIA request allows you, the public, to request records from any federal agency unless it falls under certain exemptions, including personal privacy. So when you ask for information, quite often they sit on the request claiming that, well, we've still got to review the documents, got to review the documents, got to review the documents. Now, the people who asked for this information, the FOIA request was submitted by the Public Health and Medical Professionals for Transparency. It's a group, the initial cap on all that, PHMPT, described as more than 30 professors and scientists from Ivy League schools and UCLA, not an Ivy League school, asking the FDA to respond to its FOIA request by March 3rd, 2022. And they had a specific reason for that deadline. The group pointed out that's 108 days from the request being made for them to respond. The exact same amount of time it claims the FDA took to review and license the vaccine early this year. So if they can review all of the information, the science and the research, and I guess talk to Dr. Fauci, the definitive, you know, the end-all, be-all for all things scientific, and get approval for this thing in 108 days, why can't they just simply respond to document requests in 108 days? Seems logical and reasonable. We assume, this is a quote, we assume that as the FDA has stated, that it has conducted an intense, robust, thorough, and complete review and analysis of those documents in order to assure that the Pfizer vaccine was safe and effective for licensure. The FDA now has an equally important test in making those documents available to the plaintiff in this case and the public at large in at least the same time frame. Again, I appreciate the logic behind what they're saying. FDA said in its part of the court filing that there are more than 329,000 pages that need to be, that are a part of the FOIA request, potentially responsive documents. They said that will be 80,000 pages per month to meet the proposed deadline. Okay. But the FDA office that would need to do the work has 10 employees, including two trainees, and is currently processing 400 FOIA requests. It also says the process is time-consuming, as each page must be reviewed line by line, and some information exempt from FOIA would need to be redacted. The FDA said the standard would be to release 500 pages per month on a rolling basis. That's 6,000 pages per year. If you do the division and the math on that, it's 54.83 years to respond to the FOIA request. So you have to wait until 2076 in order to get all the documents responsive to the request. FDA said courts do not waver from the standard 500-page per month processing rate, even when a FOIA request would take years to process. Well, how convenient. First off, in order to get around a FOIA request, just don't hire enough people to be able to respond to them. You're the FDA, for God's sake. You're going to get a lot of FOIA requests, particularly in the middle of a pandemic when we're all kind of scratching our head and wondering, what about the temporary emergency authorization for this particular drug that we're all being forced to take? Would it be kind of curious to know what they were looking at, how it came about to being approved? Yeah, I think we'd all be quite interested in getting that. Scientists pointed out there are few whose livelihood, education, service, and participation in civil society are not contingent on a government requirement to receive this product. On this basis alone, basic liberty and government transparency demand that the documents and data submitted by Pfizer to license this product be made available to plaintiff and the public forthwith, precisely as contemplated by federal regulations. How convenient. No, we're not going to give you the documents because we only have a couple of interns in back dealing with the already existing 400 FOIA requests we've got. Sucks to be you. You're not going to get it. Not quite sure how this is going to turn out, but it seems very convenient for FDA and all of its money and all the money that it gets and all the surplus tax dollars that they take in and all the billions and trillions of dollars laying around the federal government that, of course, we spend more than they take in anyway, that they can't manage to hire a handful more people to deal with a FOIA request. Nothing to see here, as I say. Nothing to see here. 55 years. In the meantime, of course, with Omicron floating around, they need 2 weeks to have a definitive data on what this variant can do. That, again, according to Mr. Science himself, the definitive response in all things scientific, Dr. Anthony Fauci, talking yesterday, claiming it'll take about 2 weeks to have definitive information on the new coronavirus variant. I love this one. Fauci said he believes, so I'm pausing intentionally, he believes existing vaccines are likely to provide a degree of protection against severe cases of COVID. Boy, there's something you can hang your hat on, isn't it? I think these current vaccines are going to maybe provide a degree of protection against severe cases of COVID. But he doesn't know. He just thinks. And is a degree of protection against severe cases of COVID, is that a single degree? Is it some range? He doesn't know either. He's not going to tell you because he doesn't know. Anyway, as I pointed out in the last hour, in case you haven't read, it's already spreading around. First detected in southern Africa, and of course, the Biden administration has already slapped travel restrictions on a whole bunch of South African countries. Omicron has been confirmed in Australia, Belgium, Botswana, Britain, Denmark, Germany, Hong Kong, Israel, Italy, the Netherlands, France, South Africa, and Canada. And Fauci, Mr. Science, says the new variant will inevitably reach the United States. If that is the case, is there any point in the travel restrictions? Just have to know, because I know Donald Trump was a xenophobe when it came to travel restrictions, and I guess the Biden administration is not xenophobic in cracking down on travel. If you can make sense of it, please call me and let me know, because, again, I'm confused. 616-55-CARE-CD Talk Station, 749-5500. KRCD Talk Station. Coming up, Dan Hills, FOP president, bottom of the hour. Got a little problem with a local judge letting a murderer out on a $2,500 bond. It was $25,000 at 10%. It's got a bit of a problem with that, and I certainly understand that. I'm surrounded by a bunch of articles this morning on similar things happening. You know, this whole idea of liberal bond reform and bail reform, it's just wreaking havoc on society at large. In case you haven't noticed, the smash and grab, organized crime smash and grabs are become a real thing of late. And so coming to a store near you, I suspect. Kind of curious to know whether Dan Hills and the police department have talked about dealing with the inevitable in terms of that. But meanwhile, as the FBI goes after you, parents, evil parents, voicing your concerns at school board meetings, because that's what the Department of Justice is focused on. This one flying under a lot of people's radars. Remember the Parkland, Florida high school shooting massacre?
Yeah.
Family members of 16 of the 17 victims in that massacre filed a lawsuit, which was settled. The lawsuit filed against the U.S. Department of Justice because the FBI failed to act on tips the gunman was planning to shoot at the school. Now let this sink in, people. Remember, these are the ones that are supposed to prevent crime and, of course, investigate crimes after they've happened, usually focusing on the latter because, you know, they're not clairvoyant. But when you've got as many tips as they had about this nutcase going into the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School before it happened and you don't act on them, apparently, yeah, it's time to settle. Department of Justice is going to pay $130 million to 40 survivors and family victims of the 2018 massacre, according to the New York Times. Potter Orshak, the law firm representing the families, quote, although the financial details of the agreement are presently confidential, it is an historic settlement and the culmination of the Parkland family's long and arduous efforts towards truth and accountability. When the facts add up, it's almost hard to believe they didn't do anything. 6 weeks before the shooting, a woman called the FBI's tip hotline to say the gunman, Nicholas Cruz, was posting disturbing messages on social media about collecting weapons and ammunition. She said, concerning with expressing fear that Cruz was going to slip into a school and start shooting the place up, I know he's going to explode. September 2017, the first tip about Cruz came when a Mississippi bondsman reported someone with the username Nicholas Cruz left a message on his YouTube channel stating that I'm going to be a professional school shooter. MEC News reporting two FBI agents interviewed the bondsman, a guy named Ben Benite, but didn't contact Cruz about the comment because they claimed they were unable to identify him, even though his full name was used in the comment. And think about that. The FBI, with all its resources, is not capable of finding a guy named Cruz, Nicholas Cruz, in that general vicinity of the Stoneman High School? Gives you great comfort, doesn't it? In remarks about the FBI's not following up on Cruz's comments, the special agent in charge of the FBI's Miami division, Robert Lasky, said no other information was included with that comment, which would indicate a time, location, or true identity of the person who made the comment. The FBI conducted a database reviews check, but was unable to further identify the person who had actually made the comment. 2 days after the shooting, February 14th, 2018, FBI revealed it had received tips about Cruz, but did not investigate them, according to its normal procedures. Times reported noted the devastation of the families of the victims when the FBI acknowledged they had indeed received information about Cruz before the shooting at the Broward County School. Quote, Fred Gutenberg was picking out a casket for his 14-year-old daughter, Jamie, 2 days after the shooting. Then he got an urgent call from an FBI agent working with the families. The agent delivered the difficult news. Quote, are you telling me that if the FBI did not make a mistake and did their job a month sooner, my daughter would still be alive today? Mr. Gutenberg asked the agent. The agent replied, I'm afraid so, sir. Unbelievable. So while they're investigating you and showing up at your home because you bothered to make a comment about critical race theory at your local school board meeting, and they're busily investigating you, they get actual tips on a complete nut job out there making real threats about an upcoming school shooting, and they didn't follow up on it. Okay. 626, 55 KRCD Talk Station, Sean Hannity Morning Update, followed by Dan Hills, FOP President. After I mentioned QC Kinetics. Now, do you really want to go through another year with that awful joint pain? Well, don't. .631 now, 55KRC, the talk station. Happy Monday. Try to make it a happy one anyway. Brian Thomas right here. Always happy to welcome to the 55KRC Morning Show from the Fraternal Order of Police, the president, Dan Hill, Cincinnati Police Department, Fraternal Order of Police, Chapter 69. It's good to have you on, as always, Dan. I hope you had a really nice Thanksgiving holiday.
Brian, it was pretty darn good. I was gone for several hours because we had our first police-involved shooting in quite some time.
Yeah.
And so I had to go and be part of representing the officer that was involved in the shooting. And along with that, I can give a public service announcement. If you don't want to be shot by the police, don't stab your sister and your brother-in-law and then refuse orders of the police when they respond. I mean, that's just a FYI for people out there that were thinking about doing something like that.
It's kind of a holiday-ruining event. I know that, for example, I know the captain gets called out, the lieutenant gets called out. Quite often the chief himself will have to show up in that one, although my understanding is that he didn't bother with this one because it was – I don't want to call it open and shut, but officer-involved shooting does tend to draw a lot of scrutiny these days. But
I think he was out of town, so the executive assistant police chief handled it. Yeah, everybody's waiting to jump on the police, but like I said, or like you just said, kind of open and shut on this one here, you know, and that's why I put out that rule. If you don't want to get shot by the police, just don't go stabbing family members during Thanksgiving dinner or any other time for that matter. But and then when the police do respond, if you've had that bad moment and you've decided to stab some family members, you should sharpen the knife when the when the cops come and give you a little tongue in cheek there, Brian.
I get it, but it's valuable tongue in cheek. And he got shot in the leg, right?
Yes, he did. Yeah. He got shot in the leg. And so, that's when the media responded. One of them was like, "Well, why can't we always shoot in the leg?" The executive assistant chief didn't really answer the question as bluntly as I did when I went outside. They all wanted to interview me afterwards. And I said, look, that's not the way we're trained, but that's how difficult it is to make an accurate shot under that type of stress.
Yeah.
I said, we're going to set our body mass because we're trying to stop. And not because we're trying to hurt somebody worse or anything like that. It's fortunate he was only shot in the leg, but it was most fortunate that he was stopped, so the threat was ended. And they sometimes they still believe in that. But I think Joe Biden said it too. You got to shoot him in the leg.
Wing him. Yeah. Well, and I'm surprised you didn't offer a retort along the lines of, well, that officer will be going back to firearms training to improve his grouping center mass, which is what we're supposed to do because we're supposed to be able to stop the threat. Just saying. Anyway, you don't have to go down that road with me. All right. We just in the remaining minute here, let's see if we can set this up. I received a text message from Dan Hills to the entire city of Cincinnati. I have a bit of a problem with a bond in a particular case. Just give us the thumbnail sketch facts on this one. We'll dive back on it when we return from the break.
What you have to understand is this just isn't this particular case. This is something Judge Barry does a lot, and Judge Barry's not alone. There's other judges that are giving problems with bonds But, you know, we have people that are shooting people, and they're being let out on bonds that are easily made. For example, the one I text you about, the guy got to walk out the door for like $1,300 for shooting somebody during a dice game back in March, and he's been on the run ever since. And when the police finally catch up to him and have a couple of additional charges to stack on top of it, he gets to walk out the door for, you know, pennies on the dollar, essentially, especially when you're talking about people that on the street seem to have access to cash for one reason or another, people that seem to have a lot of connection to drugs. And so he walks right back out the door.
Well, and real quick here, there are a number of factors judges are supposed to consider when establishing a bond. First off, the level of offense. Is it murder or is it shoplifting? I mean, you know, there's a huge difference, you know, society's has to deal with, you know, murder versus maybe just the petty crime. So I can understand bonds being much different depending upon the gravity of the circumstance. Flight risk is also another one supposed to be considered, right, Dan? Are any other factors that they look into?
Oh, yeah, flight risk. And I sure would like to think that public safety might be a little bit of a factor, too.
And their record, the prior criminal record as well.
Correct.
All right,
yes.
Well, let's pause for a moment. We'll take a break and return with Dan. Also, I'm going to be asking Dan about, he has a couple of comments about District 5. And I'm kind of curious to know, given that the mob smash and grab seem to be all the rage these days, with retail outlets being attacked by coordinated mobs of people, if the Sensei Police Department has taken steps to, in anticipation of that, given the holiday season and the increasing nature or occurrence of these types of crimes. So pause for a moment. I'll mention Prestige 123. It's 6:40 right now, 55 KRCV Talk Station. Coming up at top of the hour news, get my dad doing the Monday Morning Spoon event. We're going to have Money Monday with Brian James at 8:05. In the meantime, FOP President Dan Hill's on the phone to talk about bond. I know this is a big all the rage, you know, reforming bond in the name of social awareness or justice or I don't know, whatever the reasons are. The idea is that it's somehow, setting a bond disproportionately impacts poor people or people of color. What is the argument that's being made? And it's sort of,
well, I think you nailed it right there. And you know, it disproportionately affects people that are poor and people of color. And the reality is this crime and violent crime. And that's where you have to strike a balance. And you know, the police department led by an African-American chief is going out there and sending our officers to try to seize as many of these bad guys as we can. And when they're armed with guns that they're not allowed to be armed with, they can't have CCW permits when they have extensive felony records. When we know that they are involved in the drug trade, we pick them up. And then you have judges like Judge, you know, Barry that are more concerned about the perception of how the criminal justice system is fair or not. Well, I think it's got to be fair to the community and provide the service and make it a little safer. I started my little rant talking about there was a homicide in front of the Walmart on Ferguson, and I think right in front of it, from what I heard, where we're in somewhere in the 80s now in our homicides in Cincinnati. So once again, we're pushing record territory. We had a record last year, I think, with 94, 95, and we're approaching that again. And on that same day, Brian, there was a innocent 5-year-old child that was grazed by a bullet, you know, a few more inches one way or the other, and he could have been seriously injured or killed. And that's not the first time this has happened, by far from it, this year, as there is so much lead flying around in the city of Cincinnati. You have to make a stand, and that's there's marches and community organizers and everybody saying, let's stop the violence. And here you have a judge like Ted Barry that's in a perfect position to make a statement about the violence and kind of just does just the opposite. And
yeah,
if it's for some woke belief that, you know, prosecutors across this country are finding their way into office who believe in this stuff. That's why you see the murder rates and the shooting rates at the highest they've ever been in some cases, and if not the highest they've been since decades ago. And I don't know how that's fair or serving a poor community or a community of color.
No, and you're right to raise the whole issue of gun violence. I mean, if you're talking about people who have been arrested with firearms when they are already under a firearm disability, they're not lawfully allowed to carry one. This is exactly the type of thing that, you know, the woke and the left and everybody seems to be complaining about. It's not even political. It's, you know, wait a second. Some people even want to take our Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms away from us because bad guys get guns, as if that problem is going to ever stop. Where does one take a stand? How about starting with the bail hearing? If you're caught with a firearm and not allowed to have one, we're going to come down really hard on you. And the prosecutor's office is going to come down really hard on you and seek the maximum possible sentence and not negotiate over it. I mean, the judge is aware in these bond hearings of the facts, correct?
Yeah, certainly.
I mean, you got probable cause. I mean, you have probable cause to arrest them. They were found, for example, and the judge knows, we arrested him with a firearm. Look at his record. He's not allowed to have one. That in and of itself is enough to justify a high bond.
Yes, probable cause is the marker for an arrest, not reasonable suspicion. So, yes, it justifies a bond, and for the concerns of public safety and the judge is permitted to look at the past record, I'm quite certain. You put all those things together and say, for now, I'm going to lean on the side of public safety, and I'm going to see that this gentleman, usually a gentleman, is incarcerated until the time of his trial. And, you know, there's supposed to be a speedy trial in this country. We know we've gotten away from that as well. But it's everything's about a balance. And right now we're very, very out of balance. And who is suffering the most? Again, the ones that the woke claim that they are trying to help, which is the poor and communities of color, they're the ones that are suffering the most right now. And the police are doing the very best they can to keep some level of law and order and try to stop some of this just, you know, god-awful violence. But, we need some help. I think citizens need to maybe first lobby the local medias to start to cover this topic. Me covering it, on a talk radio show here or there, me covering it in social media isn't putting the pressure on these judges. But if the local media starts picking this up and making it a story that it should be a story, then I think you could see a little bit more. So maybe instead of lobbying City Hall or you know, one day, hopefully you'll lobby against this when you're voting. But in the meantime, I think some more attention by 5, 9, 12, and 19 and the Inquirer would be awfully helpful.
I couldn't agree more. So to the extent we're usually casting people to call their elected officials and complain, but in this particular case, maybe calling local media and complaining might have the result you're looking for. Certainly understand where you're coming from. And, Dan, I can only imagine that when guys like this, with this type of criminal activity, are released for little to no bond, it really has to have an impact on the police morale as well.
Oh, it's a huge punch in the gut, and that's why I get people reach out to me all the time. And Brian, if I tried to come on your show, every time that I've been contacted by policemen about low bail, you would block my number because they'd be like, oh, this is the same old thing. It wouldn't make good radio. So I try to space it out. But here we've had a couple real recents with Judge Barry of felonious assaults shootings where people are walking for, just pennies on the dollar. And that's just a great example. But trust me, there's many, many other examples very similar to this and not just Judge Barry.
All right, let's pause for a moment. We're going to get an update on District 5 and see if you've got plans to deal with the inevitable mob smash and grabs hitting our local malls. One more segment with FOP President Dan Hills. First, word for my friend Peter Chabrie of... KRC, the talk station, finishing up another round with FOP President Dan Hills, representing the Cincinnati Police Department Union. And I understand you have a comment about District 5. What's going on, Dan?
Well, you know, before there were body cameras on everybody's body in the police department. There were in-car cameras. Now, I started in 1987. There weren't any cameras anywhere. They actually just trusted what a policeman told you. But in court. But we have had the in-car cameras for a long, long time. Well, those have gone through an evolution as well. You know, it used to be just like videotapes that the sergeant would have to go, and me as a longtime sergeant used to go and get out a tape and then put in a fresh tape. Well, now the technology has allowed that there is a Wi-Fi in every district, and when you park your police car, it just automatically downloads.
Oh.
But when you have a temporary district in District 5, and they don't want to invest the money, then that doesn't work. Right? There is no Wi-Fi at District 5 to download the MVRs. So while policemen are working, when the computer is telling the sergeant or the lieutenant that, you know, a car number, you know, 21-whatever is MVR is full, then you get dispatched to one of the other police districts to go sit and sit for hours when you should be patrolling the streets of College Hill, Mount Airy, Winton Place, Northside, Clifton,
right.
Camp Washington, all these places that District 5 patrols. This lack of commitment, this long, long time lack of commitment, as you know, I've told the story here more than anywhere, since 1957, Cincinnati Police District 5 has been in a temporary facility. Now, they've switched temporary facilities, but that brings a whole new meaning to temporary, that since 1957, the infrastructure of the police department has been deprioritized. And I don't even know if that's a word, Brian, deprioritized so badly that, that you know, when it comes to just the daily functioning, the parking lot is the same parking lot as a daycare center, and officers are just, their rifles and shotguns there. It doesn't make any sense. We have a new council going in. It's a good time to lobby them to say, build a District 5. It doesn't have to be quite the Taj Mahal that District 3 is. Just build a functional place that's meant to be a police district.
Well, and there's, I understand from all the COVID money flowing in, the city's sitting on a big pile of cash. It's not like they really necessarily can't afford it.
A big pile of digits, at least, Brian, if not cash.
Yeah.
digits in a computer somewhere.
Yeah, well. Well, and lobby the city, Cincinnati City Council. I would not hold your breath, Dan. I wouldn't lose you as a friend or a listener or someone who can offer commentary, because it doesn't sound like this particular makeup of council is likely to be as pro-police as you would hope they would be. It remains to be seen how they actually work together. And finally, before we part company, I'm just curious to know, I know you're aware of all these instances of smash and grabs across the country, heading into Nordstrom with groups of coordinated groups of show up, hit and leave, hit and run kind of things. Preparing for this on any level in this, in the greater Cincinnati area there, Dan?
You know, I haven't heard any talk of the police departments preparing for that. I think the difference that we have here, we do have a somewhat functional jail for now still, and we do have a prosecutor that would not put up with that. And that's one of the reasons I think in a lot of these other communities where you have that as far leftist woke prosecutors, that's where the citizens are saying, oh, look, this will be easy to get away with. Here in Cincinnati, I'm pretty certain Joe Dieters is still going to want the police departments that work in his county to try to identify everybody that they can identify and get them indicted and get them in jail. So as a public service announcement, again, I don't think you should try this in Hamilton County.
No, I wouldn't. Certainly, I know Joe Dieters. I trust him that he would certainly prosecute him to the fullest extent of the law, if for no other reason to send a message to others who might engage in that or considering it, to consider that it may not be worth their while given the jail time that they might face. One can only hope and pray that it doesn't come to our neighborhood, various neighborhoods.
That's what happens when you let George Soros pick your prosecutor.
Isn't that the truth? Dan Hills, always a real pleasure talking with you. I'm glad you had a nice holiday. I look forward to having you on again. Hopefully maybe some positive information. But, you know, if you've got bad news, you need to pass it along to my listeners. I'm here for you. As you know, just get in touch with Joe. We'll make it happen. Until our next conversation, best of health to you and your family. And stay safe out there.
Thanks, Brian. Really appreciate having time letting on.
Always a pleasure. 6:56 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Stick around. My dad's up next. Jerry Thomas, Monday morning spleen vent. I'll be right back after the news.
Hear about it. Talk about it. 55 KRC, the talk station.
Trigger alert. Trigger alert. This is a 55 KRC trigger alert.
It's 7:06 here at 55 KRC, the talk station. And a very happy Monday to you, made always happier, because my dad's on the phone. Jerry Thomas for the Monday Morning Spleen Van. Hey, Dad, good to have you back on the program.
Oh, thank you much. How was your happy days with eating all the food?
Are you kidding me? You even have to ask that question? Boy, I think I gained like 47 pounds on Thanksgiving Day alone. Yeah, that was awesome. Mom did one hell of a job. It's tough cooking for that many people, but, man, she really pulled it off. And everybody,
I don't know how she does it.
I don't either. And she did comment on maybe hanging up the apron and calling it a day. We're going to have to test the waters next year. I said, no need to make up your mind this early. We got plenty of time to contemplate that. You know, we'll deal with it maybe, you know, next, I don't know, November.
Yeah, it's just not every year she says, I'm not going to do this anymore.
I know. I know, but you know, in our family, the tradition is we have a real big Thanksgiving followed by an off year, and this was the bigger year where most of the family from, you know, down in the Lexington area and from around town comes over, and that's why we had about 18 folks, and next year it'll be probably closer to maybe 8 people, so easier to deal with, and I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that she'll still step up to the plate with that awesome turkey and dressing. Oh, man, it was so good.
It was good.
Everything was great. Plus,
well, it never is bad.
Well, that's true.
Well, baby.
Well, and you get all the people together, too, having a good time. I don't think I heard a single conversation about politics, which was awesome.
No, I didn't either.
Everybody was interested in having a good time. It was keeping it on the down low. It was light conversation, smiles, cocktails, great food, fellowship. That's what it was all about. So I hope other people in the listening audience can say the same thing. And then if someone out there is going, no, I got a family member now that won't talk to me anymore because somebody brought up politics and it ended up in a fight. Plus, everybody was drunk and we had to call the cops. So, you know, family get-togethers quite often beget violence. So I hear that every year from the police department. So lighten up, everybody, lighten up. What's on your mind today, Dad?
I want to say, how about them Bengals?
Oh, was that fun?
Incredible.
A slaughter.
I didn't think I'd ever see anything like that.
Nah, just me. And I, you know, I have this disdain for Roethlisberger that, you know, just doesn't. The FCC will not allow me to reach the depths of how I feel about that guy. But, man, what an unbelievable blowout. Just handed them their lunch.
And they sort of, it looked like, well, we've beat them up so bad, let's just quit now.
Yeah, let them have that extra touchdown toward the end there. I think you're right.
Yep.
You know, but sadly, if you're an Ohio State fan, didn't go so well for OSU on Saturday.
Oh, man. That hurt me.
Yeah, I know.
Big time.
I know. I hate seeing Michigan win, but so it goes. Football, that's in the books now.
All right, well, let's move on to something else.
What you got?
Well, one of our favorites, yours and mine, is playing hardball with the Department of Justice and the FBI. And I'm talking about Rand Paul.
Yep.
He criticized both the agencies for what he called trampling on American liberties. Now, what he is objecting to was the agencies mentioned using the Patriot Act against parents who say they are threatening school board members, teachers, and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, and when all the parents did was speak out for their children, and it was called terrorism. Now, I can't believe they did that, but they did. Now, we're talking about the parents of kids in our schools now, not people wearing explosives on their chests
right,
and things. Rand Paul said Attorney General Merrick Garland should face consequences for misleading Congress about the FBI investigating parents.
Yes.
Parents. I think that's a lock. Now, that people were protesting the radical idea in school, and Rand Paul said that lawmakers should not let people go outside the Constitution. And anytime somebody is breaking a law in the government is a good time to reveal who is breaking the rules.
Yes.
Now, this should worry a lot of us, I tell you that. Paul said, now listen to this. My father, the former representative Ron Paul, warned about this 20 years ago. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
20 years ago, he said that when they passed the Patriot Act,
yep,
and when they began going after terrorists, he said, beware that they'll be using these same devices, these same powers, to snoop in our lives, and that they'll use it on the Americans. They're us. And sure enough, they're out there using it on disgruntled parents. You can remember that when they were running this up and down and all over the radio.
Yeah, that Loudoun County, Virginia thing, I think, was really the spark that started the fire that got parents actually engaged. That, plus parents finally got to see what their kids were learning through the Zoom conferences during COVID, and it freaked them out. They're like, oh, my God, this has been going on behind my back.
Yep. It's a shame, but I tell you what, they're going to hang on that Patriot Act some way, somehow, and I don't like the look or sound of that.
I don't either. I don't know if you heard me talking about the Justice Department paying $130 million to the survivors and families of the victims of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School because they didn't follow up on the tips that crazy guy was going to come and shoot the school up. They had all kinds of reliable tips. They didn't do anything. And so they were sued, and they settled over this past week, $130 million from the Department of Justice. Dad, think about that. They had actual tips. They identified this Cruz guy by name. They had multiple tips that he was going to shoot the school up. They didn't do anything about it. So how is it that they have all these resources and they can find parents that show up at school board meetings because they're concerned about the curriculum or children are being taught when they can't find Nicholas Cruz, even though they have his name in the high school he claimed he was going to shoot up? What the hell?
They make it up and see if it happens.
Apparently.
Yep.
Well, clearly they have more resources than they're capable of using. I mean, all that, and, you know, I've talked about with Napolitano, the Patriot Act, the data collection that goes on. They have like every single phone call and text message that you and I have sent ever. And how in the hell, with billions and billions and billions of those floating around, could they ever hope to stay up on top of it and act on any one text that's sent involving terrorism or maybe some school board member or something?
Sound like Fauci is doing things, you know what I mean?
Fauci. Doc, I made the mistake of calling him Mr. Science this morning. I got corrected and admonished by my wife, who said that would be insulting. It's Dr. Science, not Mr. Science. It's like, okay.
I call him Batman.
Batman. I like that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, the Department of Justice clearly is not focused on what truly is important, and that is criminal activity. They'd rather threaten us and quiet us and keep us at bay and allow those local school boards and the unions that represent the critical race theories to continue to, pollute the minds of our children and divide us more against each other. That's frightening. Department of Justice used as a tool for division in this country. Where?
And try not to start rumors, okay?
Yeah, right. No, I don't have to start rumors. The facts are laying here right in front of me, and as you were mentioning them as well.
Yep.
Coming up on 7:15, we'll pause. We'll see what else is on my dad's mind in the next segment after I mention my friends at Odorex. Coming up on 7:19, 55 KRC Talk Station, the only officially sanctioned Christmas music here on the 55 KRC Morning Show. Vince Guaraldi Trio, of course, Charlie Brown Christmas. And you're allowed to play it now because Thanksgiving is over, right, Joe? We have rules about that. Anyway, my dad's on the program here. It's Monday Morning Spleen Vent Chapter 2 time. I'm not going to be on next week, Dad, real quick here. I'm taking Monday off, so you get another free pass day next week. I'm trying to use up my vacation time. So Dan Carroll's going to...
Well, that'd be good. You deserve it.
I appreciate it. I don't know. Some people may say, no, I don't. But I feel like I do, so smoke them while you got them and use up my vacation day. So anyway, Dan Carroll next Monday. No Monday morning spleen vent. So let's hear what Dad's got to say today. What else on your mind, Dad?
I was just thinking, that song that was playing... It's Charlie Brown's Christmas.
Yeah.
I automatically smile.
Me too.
Isn't it something?
Absolutely. You know, that came out the year I was born, the Charlie Brown Christmas. And I remember as a kid, remember back in the day, you had to get a TV guide out and find out when those things were going to come on. It was like appointment listening. You had appointment watch and sit around the TV waiting around for 8 o'clock to show up or 7 o'clock or whenever they played it. Get real excited about it. Lisa and I always would. And, you know, I have never, ever gotten tired of watching that. It's to this day,
I
mean, 56 years old.
I understand that the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, is interested in the Speaker's job.
Yeah.
Replacing Nancy Pelosi when the Republicans win back the House next year.
I love how you said that. When?
I'm in, man. I'm in. Pitching all the way.
You know it.
Personally, I don't care who gets the job as long as Nancy Pelosi is gone. How's that hit you?
I will take that all day.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, you could replace her with a goat, okay?
Well, actually, the goat would do a whole lot better job.
It very well might. It would certainly cost the Americans a lot less money if
the old did it. Yep.
But... Do you think he's the person to fill the position? Let me re-roll that around. I think he is the right guy for it.
Yeah.
I'm talking for the
Speaker's position.
Yeah. And he's made for the job because when he was asked about taking Pelosi's job, he told the supporters that he's looking forward to the day she hands him the gavel. And then Kevin said that it would be hard not to hit her.
I was thinking the same thought. I did not hear him. I did not see the quote from him saying that. But when you said taking the gavel, I thought, oh, that's tempting right there.
Yeah.
That's tempting.
As a matter of fact, when they announced Pelosi is leaving, people will line up to buy her plane tickets.
Yeah, that is true. She can fly back to her $25,000 refrigerator freezer and $15 a pint ice cream and just stay in San Francisco.
And hey, we have to take back the house to get this done, so don't just take that for granted, okay?
No. I strongly encourage folks that, you know, if you've never donated to a political campaign, that, you know, coming up this coming election, you might want to find it in your heart to dig down and throw a little money towards some Republican candidates because
won't hurt.
Don't pass up an opportunity. You know, this building back better thing is just driving me crazy. What a gift to the Chinese.
That's sickening.
It is. It is.
Sounds like a kid made it, wrote it up.
Well, it does. And, I don't know if you heard me rant about Joe Biden and his dealing with the price of gasoline. Obviously, he's got a huge political problem on his hands because a lot of people are hurting right now with the economy the way it is. So he releases money from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, 50 million barrels, which is less than 3 days of consumption in the United States.
How stupid is that?
Well, that's dumb in and of itself, all right? Yeah. Then it turns out that 18 million barrels of the 50 he released have already been approved for sale. You know who's buying it? China and India.
Really?
That leaves 32 million barrels for us, which is about 2 days' worth of consumption.
That does a lot of good.
Oh, it gets better. OPEC, remember we were begging OPEC and the Russians to increase production in response to us digging into our strategic petroleum reserve and other countries doing the same thing, because Japan, I believe, was doing it. Saudi Arabia and Russia are now considering pausing their plans to ramp up oil production because we were going to the strategic petroleum reserve.
Yeah.
Like, okay, wait a second. That didn't work out real well. And then finally, to make things, adding insult to injury, Biden is planning on increasing the lease fees for drilling on federal lands by 50%. Which will give the federal government an additional $2.5 billion in new revenue by way of lease fees over the next 10 years. So he's made it more expensive to drill gas when he's even allowing them to drill on federal lands. What is not wrong with this picture?
Everything.
I know.
It's got his face in it.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So, but drive your electric vehicle, Dad, because we're going to help China with that since they have almost a monopoly on rare earth minerals that are necessary to make them.
Ain't no way.
Pat, appreciate talking to you. Thanks for dialing in the Monday Morning Spleen, Van. I look forward to talking with you. You and I, of course, talk throughout the week. But take another sleep-in day next Monday, and we'll get you back on. And hopefully, you're not forcing you to commit to it, but if you can make it to Price Hill Chili for the final listener lunch of the year, that's the 15th of December. So Price Hill Chili. So hopefully we'll be able to see you there. Love you, Dad. Tell Mom I love her, too, and you and I will be talking.
Love you, too, brother.
All right. 725, 55 KRC, the talk station. Get your cancer screenings. At 729 at 55 KRC Talk Station. Again, I will comment on the beautiful sky out there this morning. A little cold, but hey, you got a nice visual to go along with it. There's something at least to put a smile on your face. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to be. Going to do some local stories. And we'll have an opportunity for phone calls at 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Care to comment? Love to hear from you. Monday with Brian James coming up to top of the hour news. We have obviously Omicron skipping new and Z in favor of the more politically correct, I guess, Omicron variant. We'll be talking about how the Dow Jones got spooked. You know, rumors of like 3 cases out in the world and the Dow tanks this past week. So whether that's going to last, people will wake up and lighten up over it. We're going to find out. U.S. jobless claims hitting a 52-year low after the seasonal adjustments and the real cost of the 12 days of Christmas. That's with Brian James again after the top of the hour news. Over to local story. Thanks, Laura Bischoff of the Inquirer reporting. And to my Afghanistan veterans of war, you have a little bit of time left to apply for up to $1,500 in bonuses before the program closes out in 3 years, late 2024. Ohio voters approved the sale of up to $200 million in bonds back in 2010 to fund a bonus pay program to thank veterans, but the money's running out. Many veterans have not applied yet. The Ohio Department of Veterans Services estimates there are 32,000 Afghanistan veterans in Ohio. The state received roughly 19,000 bonus applications, but one veteran can apply multiple times. State officials are looking for ways to pump another $2.7 million into the program so that eligible veterans can get the cash. Exactly where that money will come from has yet to be determined. According to Jeffrey Rapp, the spokesman for the Ohio Department of Veterans Services, he said, our best estimates show we still need somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.7 million to complete the program and will resolve to add at least that amount to the fund. Ohio voters approved of the $200 million in bonds, but the state only sold $83.7 million based on the claims history and the anticipation that American troops would leave Afghanistan by late 2014. A little premature on that one. We know we remain in Afghanistan through August of this year with that wonderfully successful pullout from the Biden administration. So lack of money isn't the only problem that's there. While information about the bonus is posted on ohiovets.gov, it isn't being actively marketed. So here, Brian Thomas is actively marketing it, thanks to the reporting from Laura Bischoff, ohiovets.gov. Right? So it's information on how to apply. It should be rather simple once you make the application, but you have to get the paperwork in before the program ends and the money runs out. We have one man dead after a shooting happened Saturday afternoon outside of the Walmart Superstore in Westwood. About 3:30 in the afternoon, district officers responded to a report of a person shot on 2300 block of Ferguson Road. Officers showed up and found one male victim suffering from a gunshot wound, and the Cincinnati Fire personnel responded to the scene. They determined he was dead. The victim, identified as 24-year-old Jamontea Brown. Homicide Unit is continuing to investigate the shooting. If you have any information, they would love to hear from you, 513-352-3542, or I would say Crime Stoppers at 352-3040. Any place you can leave a tip, the cops would love to hear from you. We have one man in custody after a shooting in Villages at Roll Hill, this on Saturday afternoon. Saturday, a big day for shooting, I guess. 4:30 p.m. for this one, police showed up at the 2400 block of Nottingham Road after reports of a shooting. Officers found a 5-year-old. Yeah, you heard that. 5-year-old with fortunately just a superficial wound, victim treated at the scene. One adult male was detained. At the time of the reporting, the victim had not yet been identified. Where in the world is Aftab Perival? Joe suggested this is a Mark Mallory-esque maneuver on the part of Aftab Perival. We'll see if this trend continues. It's pointed out that he's a graduate of Ohio State University, got a law degree from my alma mater, University of Cincinnati, but he's going to be at Harvard. He's going to be spending 3 days this week at a seminar on transition for newly elected mayors. This put on by the Harvard Kennedy School in collaboration with the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Apparently, the invites are for mayors from cities with more than 75,000 people. Program billed as, in their words, a one-of-its-kind program that offers practical advice and best practices from experts in public policy, media, the private sector, municipal governments, and current and former mayors. Seminar is expected to address the challenges of managing a city during the pandemic, leading during a crisis, economic development, and keeping cities safe. Talked about this earlier, and Joe and I were kind of the mind that, yeah, he needs training in all those areas. I'm just wondering whether there would be any bias. Experts in public policy, experts in media. Yeah, let that one sink in. It's at Harvard, too, so you know it's not exactly what you would call a bastion of conservative thought. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Love to hear from you. If you've got a question or comment, please feel free to call. And definitely get in touch with Emory Federal Credit Union because they have the holiday skip-a-pay thing going on again this year. As a member at Emory Federal Credit Union, which I strongly encourage you bank there, they do just wonderful customer service. And they have things like this skip-a-pay. So as a member, you can skip a payment on your loans once during It's 7:39 at 55 Care CD Talk Station. Heard from Dan Hills, FOP president this morning. He has a little bit of a problem with certain judges, Barry, for example, who are setting bonds at an unbelievably low amount. I mean, you got a guy who's on a gun disability, is not lawfully permitted to shoot or to own a firearm or carry one, involved in a shooting, and ends up getting out on $2,500. Yeah, that's got the police department a bit miffed, and I'm certain the prosecutor's office isn't thrilled about it either. And, of course, it does impact morale. Check out the podcast, 55KRC.com. I mentioned the phones, and we're going to go over to the phones. We've got Mike on the phone, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or hit pound 550 if you've got an AT&T phone. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling this morning, and a very happy Monday to you, sir.
And to you as well. I'm glad you had a good holiday.
Oh, yeah, I was a little under the weather over the weekend, man, but, you know, being able to sleep in, it was just that glorious feeling of, you know, your body's natural calendar waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you realize I don't have to get up. It's just like, oh, it's just a glorious, glorious feeling for me. I'm telling you, nothing like it. Anyhow, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving as well, Mike.
I did. Thank you.
Good.
But my question or my statement is that when you were talking about the school shooting and the whole thing, that principal chose to hold that back. They knew that because if he put that kid on there, it was going to cost that school district money because they had some kind of rule down there that if he has so many things or that type of child that is a problem, they deduct money from your federal funding or your school funding.
You're talking about the Nicholas Cruz, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting that the Department of Justice settled with the families because of their epic failure?
Yes, sir. That's the one I'm talking about.
Well, don't you think that the school administration, if they have awareness that one of their children, problem as he or she may be, represents a threat to the other children, that they have an obligation to elevate it to law enforcement level and let the law enforcement take over? I mean, Lord Almighty, it's as if you're complicit
that
in the commission.
That is exactly what should have happened.
Yeah.
But the money that would have been deducted, he chose to stay silent.
Oh, so it was about the money then. Interesting.
What else would it be?
Well,
any kind of government thing, you know.
Mike, consider this. The Department of Justice paid the survivors and the families of the victims $130 million to settle the lawsuit because of their incompetence. You want to take a wild guess where that $130 million came from? Yeah.
Yes.
Your paycheck, Mike, and my paycheck, exactly. And anybody out there who's bothering to work. Yeah, we pay for that.
But so, he still gets his,
yeah.
And he didn't really care.
You got that right. You got that right. Sorry state of affairs, isn't it, Mike? Appreciate hearing from you, man. Glad you had a great Thanksgiving, and stay well. Stay well. Beware of the Omicron, apparently. Yeah. And it's just so troubling in the context of the Department of Justice going after you, concerned parents, over what you have to say at a school board meeting. Now, if you went to a school board meeting and threatened to shoot everyone, then I would suspect they would look into that. As well they should. You've threatened people. You have, you know, indicated perhaps you are likely to commit a crime. They can look into it. They can talk to you about it. They can sit you down. They can have a word or two with you. In this particular case, they had quite a few tips about Nicholas Cruz in advance of him going in and following through with what he said he was going to do. They didn't act on it. And so now they're, I mean, you think about the Department of Justice being held responsible. There wasn't a finding of liability here. But when you write a check, I think we can all agree it's pretty much of a tacit admission that you did screw up. And had this thing seen the light of a jury trial, the Department of Justice would have been held accountable for its incompetence. And to call this a failure of priority? Now, I appreciate the Department of Justice has a lot on its plate, a whole lot. And, of course, with, you know, school board members alerting the Department of Justice that they're worried about terrorists showing up at the school board meetings, that's taken away a lot of the focus on the Department of Justice on, I guess, would-be or will-be school shooters like Nicholas Cruz. It's just unbelievable. And in the meantime, you know, while they still go after Donald Trump for every little thing he ever could have possibly done, yeah, that's not over with yet. You have Dr. Fauci, who literally lied to Congress, which is an offense that's punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Ted Cruz is at least asking for a special prosecutor to be appointed because, well, it has been admitted unequivocally that the Wuhan Institute of Technology did, in fact, conduct gain-of-function research and that we did, in fact, pay for part of it. That flies directly in the face of Dr. Fauci's sworn testimony before Congress that never, ever happened. Will they allocate maybe a resource or two to look into that? Maybe sit him down? Maybe interview him? Like they did every single man, woman, and child involved in, well, anything Donald Trump had something to do with. And I thought it was particularly disturbing that when Dr. Fauci is trying to be held accountable by the likes of Rand Paul, and he points to the lies Dr. Fauci engaged in or committed to Congress about gain-of-function research, that Dr. Fauci, in response to this request, I'm sorry, it was more Ted Cruz's comment about getting a special prosecutor, says something to the effect of, well, what about January 6th? Like, well, what about January 6th? What the hell, first off, does that have anything to do with your independent testimony on a completely different subject matter, the Wuhan virus and gain-of-function research? What has that got to do with January 6th? They are investigating January 6th, Dr. Fauci. Haven't got the word on that one? They have resources allocated to that. I would like to think the Department of Justice might have a couple extra resources to investigate you and whether or not you actually did, in fact, lie to Congress. See, that would be a deterrent, Dr. Fauci. The reason we investigate things like this is to set an example for those who might otherwise go before Congress and lie to Congress. It's one of the reasons for prosecutions. It's a deterrent effect. It's there to punish those who would commit the crime, but it's also there to serve as an illustration to those who might commit the crime that they will be held accountable. Dr. Science. 749-5500, 800-823, talk, #550 on AT&T phones. If you care to comment, love to hear from you. Landing Event Center for your next party, your wedding, your corporate. 751, 55 KRC, the talk station. Money Monday coming up at the top of the hour news. Quite a few interesting topics to talk about, including the market tanking because, what, like six people got, Omicron? Omicron variant. We're still learning what that one's going to mean to you and me. And according to Mr. Dr. Science Fauci, who cannot be, well, even questioned, he needs a couple of weeks to figure out what exactly it means. Meanwhile, travel restrictions put in place, in spite of the fact that Donald Trump was labeled a xenophobe and racist for implementing travel restrictions, the Biden administration implemented travel restrictions. A whole bunch of African countries. So I guess, does that mean we're allowed to call Biden a racist xenophobe? No, because it's not evil orange man this time, so therefore it isn't racism or xenophobia. Let's see what Carol's got about the school shooting. Carol, thanks for calling this morning, and happy Monday to you.
Hi, Brian. So what brought, when you were talking about Nicholas Cruz,
yep.
I don't know if, but Trayvon Martin, supposed to be suspended. He was suspended from school. Instead of being in juvenile detention, he was involved in a robbery.
Yes. Did we lose her, Joe? Guess so. Carol and I, we are having a communication problem here. I apologize, but can't get the rest of your thoughts, so we're going to have to move on over to Joey. Hey, Joey, welcome to the program, and a very happy Monday to you, sir.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm well, man. I hope you can say you had a great Thanksgiving.
I did. I had a really good one.
Good.
And I appreciated it, and we weren't in, under Fauci's orders. But
real refreshing thing, not sitting around in a room with a bunch of relatives with masks on, right, Joey?
Yeah, it had to be killing them that they lost some control. It had to be killing them.
Well, we've got the Omicron variant now, Joey, so they're going to get their control back. Just wait.
I agree. I'm waiting for him to take that and run with it, and he really doesn't know all the facts yet, but they will take biblically what this guy says and do what he says, and it's an opportunity to seize control again and make people more dependent on the government, and la, 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 here we go again. And have you ever noticed that every variant and every time it comes out, it's always worse than the other one?
Yep.
And you know it's coming.
Well, they claim it's worse, it's more contagious, et cetera, and oh, my God. And they say that right up front. But then they followed up with, well, we're really not quite sure what it is, what it's going to mean. We're going to have to wait a couple of weeks so we can have a researcher's look at it. Pfizer, Moderna, et cetera, maybe going to tweak their vaccines, but they've got to get the bug and test it against the vaccine. We don't know right now whether the current vaccines have any impact at all or whether they will reduce your symptoms. They don't know jack squat.
Right. And he'll take total control of it. And keep in mind, this is coming from in some cases, a third world country in some areas of it that doesn't have any of the resources, research, or controls or common sense and communication that we have. So it probably could get real bad there, and they'll take that ball and they'll run with it. You better believe it.
Well, I just have to react, Joey, because you just got done saying that we here in the United States have common sense. So I'm going to have to hold on that thought and just kind of maybe give it some consideration because as of right now, I'm really not quite sure that we are the barometer for common sense.
Well, the majority of us do, and we forget that. We're not the minority.
All right.
The majority of us do. It's a few crazy people that are utilizing these things to take control of us. And the reason I called us, I think Dr. Fauci is our version, and I hate to make light of it, and I'm not, and I don't want to offend anybody, but he is our modern-day version of a Nazi doctor. He's done a lot of evil things, and people don't follow him or watch as closely as people like me and you do. But the guy's done tried products on orphans, and you know that was done with donations to these people. You know it all had to do with money. He's well-vested in Big Pharma. They don't want to use the new Delta shot. They want to run out the old one because there's too much money invested in it. There's a lot of crooked things the guy has done. He has put a stop on oxychloroquine, which is not a cure, but it is preventive maintenance, and he's used it on all his other COVID, but we won't talk about that.
Well, let me just ask this. Since you and I are both of the mind that I think collectively the American people are probably smarter and don't buy into this, do you think that after all that we have been through with the prior variants, now there's Omicron's coming up, and they're starting to make the same arguments about lockdowns and mask mandates. Do you think we are going to finally, as a population, just say, we've had enough, screw you guys, we're not going to abide?
I certainly hope they have, and I try to educate a few people every day just on some of the things that I just told you that people are not aware of. And I certainly hope so, because, you know, we can't keep going in this direction. Shutting down all our gas independents for no reason whatsoever, going up the line 5 in Michigan and shutting that down, which is going to affect the center of the country, and raise gas is even more. If that doesn't prove you what their intent is out of nowhere just to go shut that line down too, I don't know what else you need until you're actually starving and living in a box.
Well, I think we can just put an exclamation point that. Joey, thank you so much for the call and the comments. I appreciate them. Thanks for stay well and enjoy the balance of your week. It's 7:56. We're going to do Money Monday coming up with Brian James right at the top of the hour news. Stick around.
Riding the red wave.
Political tsunami.
Hang 10 with your bro, Sean Hannity.
Dude.
Today at 3:06 on 55 KRC.
8:06 here at 55 KRC, the talk station. It being Monday. I'd like to welcome back to the 55 KRC Morning Show. Brian James, Smallworth Financial, doing that Money Monday thing. Brian, welcome back. Good to have you on, and I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Happy belated Thanksgiving to you as well.
It had a wonderful one. Anyhow, obviously, we have a new variant out in the world. What is it? Omicron. They skipped right. New because they were of the mindset that NU, the Greek letter new, might be perceived as N-E-W. And therefore, people might be confused that this is an all brand new thing. This is a mutation of the pre-existing coronavirus, and I guess we're going to see some of those. We've had a whole bunch of them so far. And they skip GXI, which I don't think that's the way that's pronounced in the Greek alphabet, but probably because of Xi Jinping, since the connection with the Wuhan Institute of Virology is obvious to most people, that might sound political or bad, and we wouldn't want to besmirch the name of Xi Jinping. So we skip those two, and we're off to Omicron. In any event, even though there were only a handful of cases reported, and it has spread through a variety of different countries, the market just said, oh, my God, we're all going to die, and had the biggest sell-off of the year. A bit of an overreaction, Brian. Is this going to last? How are we looking today? What's going on?
Well, this is America, and the only reaction is an overreaction. So, yes, of course it was an overreaction. So, and I say that because we don't know. We never know anything. We don't know nothing until we know. So,
right.
This the reaction is on the headlines, and the Dow was down 900 points. Remember when that used to sound like a lot? Well, it's a couple percentage points now, right? So,
yeah.
900 points isn't that crazy when you look historically speaking. But that said, as we're sitting here talking right now, futures are up a couple hundred anyway. So now comes the, okay, everybody exhale. Let's see if the world's really going to end or if this is just another crazy headline we have to deal with.
Well, isn't that a buying opportunity? If the market's stupid and everybody throws it sells everything because of this, oh my God, we don't know what's going to happen, so let's unload. It sounds to me like that's an opportunity for folks that are maybe of cooler heads to dive on in and buy up some of those stocks that drop. Were there any specific categories that dropped, or was just really across the board sort of reduction?
Yeah, but mostly across the board. Whenever the index has come down, that means everybody's having a bad day. But the ones who took it the worst were the ones, and you can kind of figure this out. You can piece together who it was. It was the airlines. So Delta, United, and American were each down 8-9%. And if you think through this, well, that's because the instantaneous reaction is, oh my gosh, new coronavirus. What's going to happen? We just went through this a year and a half ago. Therefore, everything that happened a year and a half ago is all going to happen again. So the instantaneous reaction is we need to dump the airline stocks because people are going to stop traveling. That's possible. And it's definitely you're seeing where you're starting to see restrictions among certain countries. The United States has not yet gotten to that point, but there are some countries out there who have locked down inbound flights from other countries. So yeah, you're seeing those kinds of things, but not yet at a point where we would want to say, hey, it's really time to hit the reset button, because all this is going to happen exactly the same way it did the last time.
Well, going back to the point you made earlier, we don't know. And last year we were filled with a bunch of question marks, and it took quite some time for us to get a real full clear picture of what COVID was doing and who it actually was impacting. I have to observe, we are more than a year later after that. More people have died this year from COVID than even last year. So in spite of everything that was done, it didn't really stop the number of deaths as a consequence of COVID. So maybe we didn't do it right.
Yeah, there's always that argument. We'll probably figure out 10, 20 years from now when we have the next pandemic what to learn from this one. But at the same time, I think that the numbers are indicating that we are definitely not through this yet. This is the Omicron version, and you pointed out that they had avoided a couple other variants for just semantic reasons. But there have been several variants since the Delta. This is just the first one that we're talking about,
right?
Because this is the one that seems different. So every time something different comes out, what we do is just as human beings, we look for the closest thing in history that kind of sort of rhymes with it. And then we assume that that's going to happen again. So, yeah, the markets are reacting in a way that you might suspect. We have some concerns. There are concerns out there that could affect profitability. It could affect the ability to make it through all these things. But at the same time, like you said, these are buying opportunities whenever this kind of thing happens. But my question for anybody who treats it as a buying opportunity is, why were you sitting on that cash in the first place? What have you been doing with it for the past couple of years that all of a sudden Friday was the time to pull the trigger?
Well, that's a legitimate point, and I hadn't given that much thought. But I guess there may be some people out there sitting on some cash that has yet to be invested. So it's never too late to do that. The beauty of compounding cannot be lost on anyone. So, but I guess going back to the airlines, didn't they have a really banner week last week with the Thanksgiving holidays? I saw travel was in excess of 2 million people. It hasn't been that high in a long time.
Absolutely, yeah, and we're still coming out of a hole, right? So we're still not back to the norm of where we would be with people traveling and just, you know, back to business as usual. We hadn't had that, of course, since before 2020. We're still digging out of that. But yes, the run up to Thanksgiving was huge. There was a lot of travel going on, and it did start seem like we were taking major steps toward back to the norm before we had all ever heard of the word Omicron. So, yeah, we're still taking 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. And that's probably how it's going to be until we're all the way through this. And that's really, honestly, how we recover from every major shock to the economy and the stock markets. 3 steps forward, 2 steps back.
Well, and I thought it interesting. This wasn't, a tech-related sell-off. It was the sell-off hit the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, and the Dow about equally. They all dropped this about the same amount, which sort of adds to your point that this was just an across-the-board kind of thing.
Right. And what we see there is a flight to quality or a flight to safer stuff, because we know that because bonds went up at the same time. So money came out of stocks and went into bonds. Now, we're still not anywhere near a situation where people are going to go, look how much money I'm making in the bond market. That's not really what the point is. It's about protecting right now.
All right. Now, do you have recommendations for investors? Clearly, there is a lot of advice out there, or individuals acting on impulse. For example, with the announcement of Omicron, they moved their money into the bonds. Is that something a financial planner would soundly recommend? I mean, because you and I have talked many times over the years, and I've talked to other financial planners, that doesn't sound like anything I've ever heard by way of advice.
Yeah, we tend to be pretty boring people. This is the eat your vegetables advice, right? So what I always tell my clients is, long before anything crazy like this happens, we're going to prepare for it by making sure that the money that we would be otherwise moving around is not money that we're going to need anytime soon anyway. The way we do that is, let's figure out what do we need. So I've got X amount of dollars, and I know my bills are going to be this much over, the next 24 months, let's say. And I've got to replace the roof, I got to buy a car or send a kid to college or whatever. Let's quantify the dollars that are going to come due over the next relatively short-term period of time. And I like to say 12 to 24 months. And then let's just make sure that those are nowhere near the market to begin with. Because nothing good comes from trying to gamble at the last minute to squeeze out a little bit of earnings when I know I've got a giant tuition bill or a house bill or whatever coming up. So that's one way to do it. Make sure you've got that cash liquid. And then second is, just make sure that beyond the 24 months, make sure there's always a liquid cushion anyway. And that's the good old emergency fund. So, the way I tell people to do that is, figure out what you spend. For a lot of people, it's just your take home. If you bring home, let's say $5,000 in take home, you and your spouse or however that works, and you wind up with $1,000 left in the bank after the month, that means you spend about $4,000. Therefore, multiply that by 6. There's 6 months worth of expenses. If you've got $25,000 in the bank, park that to the side, stick it in the bank, and be angry about the interest that it doesn't pay you.
Yeah.
And then figure out those 24-month expenses, set that aside too. And the rest of it rides the roller coaster. It's just the way it is nowadays. That's the way you get ahead, by not panicking and not reacting to these short-term swings.
Okay. And the lack of panic comes from the fact that you have that established cushion. So let us be clear on the steps. First order of business before investing in the market is to always have that cash cushion in case of emergencies. That takes the pressure off you. You can look at it. You just don't touch it, even though it's right there. Then you start investing.
That's exactly right. And it's going to be a little different for everybody, because we've all got different expenses, different responsibilities. But sit down and figure out what that means for you and your family. Well, park it off to the side and then treat the long-term money the long-term way.
Well, isn't that also, I guess, a golden opportunity to review what you spend your money on to really make better and more educated choices about whether it's really necessary?
Oh, absolutely. And the way this comes up in a financial planning conversation, people will walk in with a spreadsheet and they've got all their budget lined up, and they'll say, we spend this at the grocery store. Here's what our streaming bills are. Here's what the internet is. All stuff that we know in the top of our heads, what we can rattle off that we spend. And then what I'll do is, okay, cool. Let's look at your pay stub. Let's look at the bottom of your pay stub. Those are the dollars that are actually hitting the bank. And what I look for then is, are we adding up money? Are we running up money on credit cards? You know, and if the answer is no, that's a good thing. It means we're not spending more than we're bringing in. Is it piling up in the bank? If the answer to that is no, then we know we're spending what's coming in. As soon as it hits the bank, it goes back out the door that month. So we always want to make sure that that take-home pay, whatever's left over, matches what, if somebody keeps their own budget. Let's make sure that they're being realistic. We all forget exactly how many times we go to Kroger in a month,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
two big trips. You know, I know my family spends, I don't know, probably $300 twice a month or something like that, on the big trips where we get the whole crowd together to unload the minivan. But I also know my wife and I stop at the grocery store at least every other day,
yep,
for one thing or another, and it all adds up. So we got to be honest with ourselves what our real spending is.
Yeah, and as someone, and before we part for the break, someone who, like me, who tries to make my purchases in cash. You know, you get that credit card statement at the end of the year that shows you everything you spent your money on. And it's really great. It's all broken down, kind of Orwellian in the fact they've got all this information, but it really helps you get a grasp on what you spent on. I always have to step back from that and go, okay, well, this just represents what I spent on the credit card. It doesn't necessarily mean it's what I spent for all of my purchases. So there's just
exactly. Yeah. There's plenty of places. For example, Duke Energy won't let you use a credit card. We're having money pulled from our checking accounts for that. So you got to look at both places to get the true picture.
All right. Let's pause for a moment. We're going to find out about the U.S. jobless claims, a 52-year low. Wow. What does that mean? More with Brian James. It is 8:21 here at 55 KRC, the talk station. As with every Monday, we're in the middle of Money Monday with Brian James. And on to the U.S. jobless claims hit a 52-year low. This after seasonal adjustments. I'm reluctant to say that's great news. Brian, what's the appropriate spin or take on this one?
Well, as with everything, we don't want to react to the first bit of news. However, that said, it is a good sign. So what this is, jobless claims are, or for initial jobless claims, as it were, are literally when I walk into the unemployment office and I claim to no longer have a job. That's what it is. This is a weekly number that has come out since 1967. And since then, it has averaged about 359,000. In other words, that's about, since the beginning, that's about how many people on a weekly basis go in and claim their first unemployment check. Since 2014, to give a more, you know, recent number, since 2014, it's averaged about 245,000. That's kind of arguably the time period where we were past 2008 and kind of normalized. So recently, of course, it spiked to 6 million, literally 6 million in April of 2020 because of COVID. Now, so the big news here is that we've been hovering somewhere in the 300,000 range since September. Last week it was 270,000 as of November 13th anyway, and then the big drop now was to 199. So we dropped all the way to 71,000. On one hand, you want to say, hey, lower numbers are good, especially when we average 245. We just went through a crazy recession, lots of job losses.
Right.
If the average has been 245 and now it's 199, that's good. There are people out there who would argue that, well, that's just seasonal because we're hiring a bunch of people to deal with the holiday rush. And that's always true. That's in there. So I looked at that average. And on average, the decrease from September to December of any given year is in the range of about 30,000, which I'm assuming sort of accounts for that. This is a little bit unscientific.
Right.
However, since September of this year, it's down about 150,000. So I got to think there are people in there, and Brian, you'll love to hear this. There are people in there who finally spent the last stimulus check that they received back in September and had to come back to work.
All right. But this does this have, I mean, it does have a connection to know how many people, I guess, are no longer even looking for employment, that they could work if they chose to. There are obviously still a whole bunch of jobs still available, unless that figure's changed, Brian. There was about 10 million jobs available and not enough people to fill them. So are we still struggling with that problem of people just not going back to work and calling it a day?
Yeah, but it's not as bad as it has been. There are always people that drop out of the workforce. But at the same time, I've seen enough evidence just reading other articles and preparing for this discussion of people literally being quoted in articles saying, I literally ran out of money and I don't have any more savings and it's just time for me to go back to work. Now, that's completely unscientific, but I haven't seen that since the beginning of all of this. You and I have been talking about this all year long.
Yeah.
And I don't remember ever seeing comments from people actually saying what you and I suspected, which is that they were just living off of the unemployment plus the bonus checks they were getting. Now I'm starting to see them speaking to that point to reporters.
That's rather interesting. It just points out, I mean, what government does can have a profound impact on how we out here live our lives and the decisions we make. And I think that's just a great illustration of it. You keep paying people money, they're not going to go back into the workforce. And until that money runs out, they don't have any incentive to go back in the workforce if they're comfortable enough with whatever the government is doling out on a month-to-month basis. And that's enough for them, then we lose their productivity and they just become net takers. I mean, I just want to respond with duh.
Yeah, and it's honestly, it's not unlike the decision that a young couple faces when one spouse is thinking about staying home with a new baby. You have to weigh in, what is it going to cost me to hire daycare and all that kind of stuff versus if I just stay at home? I'm not comparing those two situations. They're very different, but mathematically, it's the same decision. Can I get away with what's coming in anyway without getting out of bed if I just want to stay home? And until those bonus checks went away, the answer was yes, but that's the part that seems to be changing.
All right. Well, it's 8:25. We're going to get one more segment with Brian James. The real cost of the 12 days of Christmas. I guess he's going to let us know what a partridge in a pear tree is going to cost. More with Brian James coming up. It's 8:30. Happy Monday. Money Monday with Brian James, wrapping up a segment with the traditional 12 days of Christmas and the real cost. Let me guess, Brian, the price of the 12 days of Christmas is going up. I hear nothing but everything's more expensive. We got supply chain problems. We have fuel problems. We have lack of availability of certain products. We have, shipping containers still sitting out at sea waiting to be unloaded. It seems to be one thing after another, Brian, and this, of course, causes inflationary pressures.
It does indeed, and nothing says the holidays like taking a time-honored Christmas carol, such as the 12 Days of Christmas, and tying it to the supply chain. That's exactly what's going on here. So every year, PNC puts out a list of the 12 Days of Christmas, all of the gifts involved in that song, and gives an approximation of what it would cost. So if you are desperate for gift ideas for your loved ones, and you're going to throw the Hail Mary and get these 12 gifts, it's going to cost you right now about $41,000. That's up about 6%. Since 2019. Now, they didn't bother doing it in 2020 because it was just such a disaster.
Right.
But if we're looking over 2019, yep, up about 6%. Now, within that, there's some things you might expect. Go figure, your two turtle doves, your three French hens, those are up about 40, 50%. You can see that at the grocery store, Brian. Chicken is up. Poultry is more expensive because it's tougher to drive them across the country. It just simply costs more.
So
those are the kinds of things we're seeing.
Let's throw in the price of beef in there, even though the song doesn't mention a wonderful hamburger. I mean, the price of beef's gone through the roof as well.
Yeah, and we're still seeing this out there in the wild. It's just it just is expensive to move things across the country, and you're even seeing places like up in South Dakota where normally things like beef are really, really cheap. because it's right there outside the grocery store, basically. But you're still seeing price spikes in areas like that, in just reflecting the fact that it just costs so much to pay truck drivers to buy gas and move it all across the country.
All right. Well, okay. I'm looking at the list, and it is kind of funny when you read it and you see what the increases are. I guess I'm wondering how come 8 maids of milking is at 0% increase. They're not making any more money, the 8 maids of milking, or is that a reference to the price of milk?
Well, no, it's a reference to the federal minimum wage. So we're assuming that that milking maids would make the minimum wage, and that has not changed. So therefore, those folks are unfortunately still making exactly what they made in 2019.
And those are the folks that are actually getting hit hardest by the inflationary pressures. Those who are making the least obviously have the biggest problem when it comes to inflation.
That's exactly right, because and this is just a factor of, I think the tail that wags the dog in this country is big business, quite frankly. And, there's a lot of arguments to this. But at the same time, if big businesses don't want to pay more, they're not going to. Now, we're finally seeing a reaction. We do seem to be seeing a reaction in the labor market to that, of people just not coming back to work either. You know, as we talked about a little bit earlier, and all year long, people just exiting the labor force. There's that component. But there's also people saying the with it. I'm not going to do this job anymore. I'm going to go find something else. And the minimum wage does have a lot to do with that. There are people, this is why there are signs taped to cash registers in fast food restaurants saying, please be patient, because they can't get enough people in to serve the customers they have coming in.
Well, one thing that I know a lot of folks are interested in, this may have some more concrete analysis when it comes to Christmas time and gift giving. The 5 gold rings, of course, a lot of people buy jewelry around Christmas time. Is that changed much?
Yep. So this, obviously, you can sniff out where this one comes from. This is simply the price of gold.
Yeah.
Gold is a commodity, and therefore it is worth what people are willing to pay for it. That's it. End of story. Gold doesn't produce a dividend. It doesn't have a profit. It doesn't produce the next iPhone or anything like that. It's just worth what people want to pay. That's up about 8.5% just over the last couple of years. And again, reflecting what we see in the economy, whenever we have some kind of scary, spooky things going on, commodities will tend to rise a little bit as people will... And I'm going to be honest, Brian, I never quite got it, because people talk about, I want to buy gold because the market is scary.
I know.
What are you going to do? You're going to shave off a couple flakes and buy a loaf of bread.
I know. I always say you can't eat it, and it's not easily to. I mean, if you're starving in the wilderness, having 10 pounds of gold ain't going to do you jack squat. If the guy next to you is starving as well and would not be willing to trade food for a hunk of metal. I mean,
ammo and spam is what you need if we really get into that situation.
I always like to throw alcohol in there too, because I would imagine that if people in hard times would like to have food, have ammo to protect themselves, and of course would enjoy a really nice big tall cocktail. So don't overlook that one. Does this offer any? I know it's a comical way of looking at inflationary pressures to see the year to year change on this, but does this offer any investment advice as we stare at it?
I think on the commodity side, because what we're showing here, and it is, you're right, it's just a cutesy way to look at, to make the CPI stuff a little less boring. You know, it's interesting. They call it the Christmas price index. Well, that's also the consumer price index. It's really the same thing. It's just a reflection of stuff that we've become used to and have worked into our budgets and are accustomed to involving in our spending is now more expensive. So here's a way to kind of translate it down to normal people. But at the end of the day, all that matters is, I'm sure you know what you spend in the first place, right? If you don't know what you were spending in 2019, then you can't really calculate what the impact of inflation has been on you and your household. And there's a lot of people out there that really just don't have an idea what they spend. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. People who don't know what their budget is also tend to not know what their take-home pay is, because they don't have to pay attention to it. Doesn't mean they're starving, but it does mean they don't really have a handle. And it also, so that can put them in a position of not being prepared to handle something crazy that comes out of the blue.
So they're comfortable in their earnings and therefore don't need to pay as close attention to what they spend. Is that what I'm hearing from that statement, Brian?
Yeah. And it's in my experience as a financial advisor, that usually means that I've got somebody sitting, because that'll come up at the very beginning of a relationship. That usually means I've got somebody sitting in front of me who is usually in a pretty good spot. If they don't have, if they can tell me right off, they don't have a boatload of debt, but they have no idea what their take home pay is. That tells me that they're pretty responsible people because they've never been forced to figure out where that next dollar is going to come from or to make sure there's money in the checking account. Usually a good sign, but not always.
Usually, but that also, to me, represents someone who would benefit from financial planning because obviously they're going to have in that some disposable income, which could be properly invested and earn them money over their lifetimes and help them plan for retirement. I mean, that just seems to go without saying.
Yeah, there's really two types of people. There's the people who have to worry about making the correct moves now so that they don't wind up eating cat food in retirement. That's one type. There's another type of people that, like you just described, and those are the people where they're fine. It's no longer a black and white decision of this is a bad idea, this is a good idea. It's now a choice between good ideas, better ideas, and best ideas, which is really about optimization. If I'm in that good of a position, what opportunities am I missing? Should I be, I don't know, converting to Roth, should I pay off my mortgage instead of the 401k? When you've got options, it's a lot harder to pick the right answer, but it's far more important to make sure you're not missing opportunities.
Right, and you know, one of those opportunities, as you say that, and as we part company, Brian James, is the idea that, well, maybe if you put a little bit more toward your future, that you can retire early, which might not even cross someone's mind. Like, well, wait a second, I'm not going to have to work till 65 or 68 if I plan a little bit better. I mean, that'd be a nice thing to be able to, you know, sort of put in the back of your mind.
Yeah, it really would. A lot of people out there get fixated on a number. I need a certain pile of dollars. And once I've put away, or they'll say, I'm only going to save 10% of my 401k. If I've done that, then I've done my job for this year. Well, that's great. But if you can squeeze 12, 13, 14, 15%, something like that out, now you're playing with time. The more you put away, the sooner you could potentially hang it up. So it really just depends on what your priorities are. And that takes sitting down, you know, with your spouse, for sure, if you're there too, if you're married, and looking and figuring out what do we really want out of this? What do we want to sacrifice now in exchange for what gain later? That answer is different for everybody, but it's an important conversation to have.
Brian James, always a pleasure. Appreciate you spending time with my listeners and me every Monday, although we're going to take a pass next Monday because I am taking a day off. Got to use that vacation time up for the end of the year, Brian. So Monday off for me. So 2 weeks from today, we'll have another edition of Money Monday, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right, looking forward to it. You enjoy your day off.
Do the same. Thanks very much, Brian. We'll talk. 8:40, coming up on 8:40, 55 KRC, the talk station. Bye.